So, review and approval of minutes from the May 6th meeting. Any idea? Anybody read them?
No.
No? Chance to give them a quick view. See if they were near correct. See how Chris is doing in our probationary year.
That one was Megan.
Megan. Oh, okay. Never mind.
Okay, I guess so. Yeah. All right. I'll move that we accept as presented.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion and
second
to adopt the minutes as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Okay. Outreach, social media, etc. Justin.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a news story that we put together. Social media posting, and we wanted to get the word out about giant hogweed to the general public. This is kind of one thing that we've been doing, kind of a weed of the month. And before this, we had done one for poison hemlock. That had done pretty well, but the one that we did for giant hogweed, you've got your picture in front of you there with a child's hands with blisters on them. From a very bad hogweed sunburn. That one did amazingly well.
Saw it on the news.
Yeah, the industry term is that it went viral. And, we did so well from Facebook and Twitter and also on Instagram that news media called us. And they asked us if we wanted them to help to tell our story. Mm-hmm. And our media person calls that earned media, basically, where we don't have to ask for a press release, ask for time, you know, try to pay people to get the story out. They come to us. So that was very exciting. I was on several local TV stations. It actually went up to Seattle as well.
Oh, really? Well, that far.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And there was some national exposure with Better Homes and Gardens. We were mentioned in Better Homes and Gardens.
As if hogweed is a better home. Yeah. Better garden?
Yeah. Kind of more of a watch out for it in your garden.
Yeah.
We'll know.
So, we were just mentioned along with some other places that also have it in Better Homes and Gardens.
You also went before the county council, didn't you?
That's right.
Apologize.
But. Well, that's all right. Because of how amazing it went through social media, the council did, ask to. They were interested anyway in having us kind of explain what this is, where it came from, and give a little bit more backstory to them. So Danielle and myself, we did do that, and that went well. I think that we basically...
Hopefully maybe we were able to pitch a little bit to the county council that, if we had more money, we could do a better job of controlling that and these others. And
Well, certain rules keep us from doing too much of it. I did make sure to throw in there that I have 3 field inspectors, and they survey the whole county. So,
You didn't say as much of the county as we can, but you said the whole county.
No.
You missed it, Justin. Okay, all right. I won't critique it too bad. But yeah.
So I think that they did get the message, though.
Good, I hope they did.
Danielle put in also that we're small but mighty. You know, we're doing the best we can.
Yeah, 1.3 million people viewed the social media post, and we had an engagement of 500,000 people. So it was huge. It's the biggest posting for all of the county on social media platforms.
What else did you do besides giant hogweed? You did another posting, you said?
Earlier than that, we had done poison hemlock.
Oh, poison hemlock.
And that reach was 17,000 people. So wow, that kind of gives you the difference.
Why the difference? Except for the blistered hand. I mean,
sending the blistered hand to children.
Children.
So after that, we did Tansy Ragwort, and that also did pretty well as far as social media goes for the county. The county does social media posts, and usually they're all right. This time with giant hogweed, we did better than all of the measles story, too. So it just kind of goes to show you that, Facebook post about this was very, very big. So much so that when we're working the fair, I just did Saturday. And when we're working at the fair, a lot of people will come by and see our big posters of giant hogweed, and they'll say, oh, I saw this on the news. And so it just kind of confirms.
You don't have a plant there for display?
We have a dried cane that shows how big around it is, so people can touch it. It's dried out and rendered safe.
Okay.
But we have the life-size poster up there as well.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Generated a lot of talk in the coffee shops, people talking about it, so it got out to the street well, and then I remember the discussion at the Tree Farmer of the Year, too. There was questions about it a little bit there, so it did get around, so notoriety was great.
Yep. I'll pass around. This is two copies of our presentation to the council. One of them, in black and white there, has some of the notes of stuff we actually said. I won't bore you with the whole presentation for you guys because a lot of it was explaining our program, so I'll be set for you guys.
So I see on here it says, you know, you can boost it for $30 to more. Did you do any boost at all?
Didn't need to.
Yeah.
And we doubled our we over doubled the following for Public Works. I looked this morning and we have added we're four shy of 1,000 additional followers in the last month. So, it was back at 600 when we first started, and now it's at 1,600. So it's pretty huge, the reach that's happening now on the social media platform.
Good. Good job on that.
Take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So the Tansy Ragwort posting that we did this time, after we added all those followers, now they're seeing new information about Tansy that they otherwise probably wouldn't have heard of. So it is working.
Good deal.
The only problem is North County doesn't have as much internet, services as South County does. I'm sitting there going, I suppose it's all South County that got all the deals.
Yeah, it could be. It could be, but we've actually done really well on Nextdoor as well, which is another kind of social media, but it's targeted specifically to local areas.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had spread the word previously through Nextdoor, we did really well there too. So you can actually see on Nextdoor where you're getting people responding from.
Mm-hmm. How come you don't put where the rest of the places you see these things? You got Ridgefield.
your area there, Lee. Take care of it, would you?
Was that Les Greer's?
No, so geranium. Yeah, that was just specifically to show them where the picture was taken and make it a local thing. The other picture that I got there was a great picture of garlic mustard, but wasn't actually a local picture. We've got some local pictures when you go on at the end of the presentation about the garlic mustard pole. So,
Now that isn't Les, is it?
Because I don't know that there's a pond there.
I don't think he's got a big pond.
Yeah. I think that was Paul Snowy's picture, actually. I think he was the one that took that. So, anyway, it's been around for a while.
Yeah.
So, and then I'd like to take just a little bit of time to give you some updates on our program.
Yep.
So far, the field inspection program has been doing fantastic for poison hemlock reports and compliance. Right now, we are definitely into our tansy ragwort season. For us specifically, we've been pulling quite a lot of tansy ragwort on the roadside. And you'll see in your handouts...
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yep.
You've seen your handouts. First page, we've got the picture of the schedule for July with the county agreement with the Department of Corrections. The Large Mountain crew came out for us all those days in yellow except for the 16th. They went home early a couple of other days. They were on lockdown. Prison was on lockdown on the 16th. Didn't come out then. But we had 7,504 pounds of tansy that were pulled. And I wasn't sure on the exact numbers, but it's something like $300 to $400 for that crew per day to come out and do that work for us.
How many people is that involved then, the 300 or 400?
So, yeah, I think it changes just a little bit depending on the number of people. This time around, we had two... and sometimes three, but I think it was most of the time two, and then Officer Lewis is with them. So
actually, you're probably paying for Officer Lewis more.
Right.
Yeah.
It depends on good behavior. So who's available to come depends on how they're behaving. And so it can be 2 to 3, it can be 4, 5, or 6.
Yeah.
It just depends on the day.
City of Richfield uses them a lot, and they get 5 or 6.
Yeah.
All the time or more. There's a big bunch out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, the tansy that you pull, you bag it, do you?
They do, yeah.
Yeah. And then what do they do with it from there?
They pull it back to here on a trailer. We pull out each bag and weigh it on our scale.
Okay, all right.
And then we throw it in the dumpster.
Okay, so it just goes into the landfill.
That's right, yep.
It isn't shredded or anything done with it before you...
Nope.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking if there was something, another step done so that it, you know, to ensure that it doesn't, it doesn't leave viable seed. Yeah, I don't know. Anyhow.
So we've been using zip ties to close the bags some of the time. And one of our employees felt that zip tying the bag instead of tying it shut, you'd get more tansy in there. And I don't see how, you know, the zip tie is going to come off as much as maybe they might get untied, depending on who's doing it. So
I'm just thinking the bags could get torn or whatever, and okay.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But we have been telling people about that for our fair shifts when we're at the Clark County Fair, telling people about how we pulled 7,500 pounds of tansy. So
you get in a patch of tansy and you got a bush here that's got the caterpillar on it, and you got a bush here without the caterpillar, will he get to that?
Probably not. No. Usually what happens is they get fat and happy off of one plant, fall off, pupate, do their thing, and they don't hardly do very much at all, really. It's more like a mowing, so the base of that
plant... Some of the ones I've seen are just really tiny, and then the other ones are big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's hard to tell you go through it, and when I start seeing them, then I back out of there.
Mm-hmm. So if you hand transfer a few, shake one
you
plant...
You could. Yeah,
I mean,
could.
If you want to take the time to do it, that will take care of maybe two plants then, but they don't actually transfer by themselves.
I think if they're small enough, they might.
Yeah.
But the big ones, I think they're probably pretty set
up. Like you say, just get fat and happy and fall off. Okay.
Probably transfers pretty much strictly by moth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From one patch to another patch, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I forgot what I was going to say.
No, what? I'll tell them myself. I got a telephone call from somebody, and they said, you're supposed to be farming this piece of ground, and there's tansy there. And Yes, I was farming the ground. It wasn't on any of the ground. It's where they had the house. And it was where the house was, but they passed the buck on me. And we went over and took care of it. But 60% of them had bugs on them. But we went that same day. Not that I don't have some someplace else or whatever, but that was kind of the story, passed the buck, and we had nothing to do with the homestead. But
you got... renters like I, or leasees like I have.
No. Actually, leasers over there again yesterday, and I saw a half a dozen of them that didn't show before. Were there and took care of.
Well, that reminds me of what I was going to say. Anytime we run across a plant that's got a lot of bugs on it, what we'll do is pull it so that it, you know, can't keep going, but we'll also lay it down in place so that they can keep finish what they're doing. So it doesn't have, you know, only one. You know, if you have enough bugs on it, they'll probably keep eating it, but if there's really very few bugs, then they're probably not going to get to it all. So,
but at least they'll grow and mature.
Decimated
and moth. Just came to mind that I drove 162nd or 164th south the other day, off to the west side of that, going southbound. Looks like a huge field of tansy out there.
Is it the one with the oak trees?
Yeah, it's just the flat bottom there.
Where there's the sidewalk?
Yeah. Just that big flat there.
Is that new conservation?
Burn Bridge Creek?
I guess that would be. It's across from Anderson Dairy. Flat. Yeah. It's all part of that valley there.
I used to farm that.
That's a big field of it now.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Not real close to the road. It's back a ways, but it is visible, so I just curious about that one. Nobody's mowing it yet or doing anything.
And I got a call from Ryan, and he's vegetation manager, City of Ridgefield. He said, I see your name on the notice that we got. And he says, we're taking care of it tomorrow. We actually had the crew, and there was some tents, but they were taking care of it tomorrow.
Going out there.
All right. Next, I just wanted to make mention of the fact that we've been assisting the state Department of Transportation to treat a lot of their noxious weeds, specifically going after brush skeleton weed, because that's one that's primarily on I-205, I-5, SR-14. Looks like it's spreading all along there. And we don't really want it to do that. So we've been working with them since it's actually really hard to find and see until it's in flower, and then it's too late, and it's quite a difficult plant to deal with.
Well, you mentioned DOT and 205 there. I noticed that down across, coming towards, if you're headed northbound, on the east side there, headed towards Burnt Bridge Creek or the 500 interchange, used to be just full of thistle on that bank.
Yeah.
Okay, now the thistle's gone, and now we've got teasel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just full of teasel in there. Great.
I see a few plants out towards Battleground now. It's going north.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, on 503. A few plants.
Huh?
A few plants in there. It's
Go ahead and pull them, Jerry.
Yeah.
Well, I did just check, and we do already have warning letters sent out middle of July, actually, so a couple weeks ago, for that one that you mentioned.
Yeah. Well, I see the state's out there west mowing this morning, south, Battleground Light south, on the west side of the road, mowing the sidewalk anyway. Finally.
And when I was spraying with washed up, we sprayed hundreds of gallons out for brush skeleton weed. And talking with the employee doing that, he actually does want to kill teasel, but it's kind of lesser priority. I was trying to steer him toward the poison hemlock and, you know, the rush skeleton weed and stuff that's listed, you know. So,
yeah.
What we want to do, though, is kind of change it from the setup we have now, where they bring their spray equipment, they bring the spray, the truck, and then we show them, you know, all the places, and I was actually on the gun for a lot of time. We want to change that to a formal agreement with them so that we're not just donating all this county time to the state, so that maybe they will reimburse us for that. We have kind of more of a formal MOU there. It would be really helpful to have some of that be more established, and we'll work on that over the winter, just to make sure that they know what we expect of them, and they can, you know, have a little bit of continuity from year to year. They kind of describe some of the budget issues since they're on a biennial budget. They come up to the end of their budget cycle and say, well, we don't have any more money for anything. And so I had to fight through that and say, no, you do find it, you know. But they did, you know, they just needed a lot of assistance. And the Japanese knotweed grant application was successful. So as much as we have the bandwidth for, time permitting, we can do some action on that this year. Kind of remains to be seen exactly how much we can do there. Probably most of the action is going to happen next year, since it's a biennial. We'll probably be doing most of our treatments next year. Did just want to make mention, though, that there's quite stringent new program limits on the treatments. We need to start at the farthest upstream on the tributaries, and we have to work down from that point. And if at any time one of those landowners doesn't turn in their permission to enter the property form and says, no, you can't come, then we cannot do any treatments downstream of that person. So I could foresee that going really short, really quick, where we get one no, or, you know, the person just doesn't respond.
Well,
whatever it be. And
that's frustrating. Who has instituted these new...
It's the WSDA. I spoke with, I think his name is Jonathan Still. Yeah. And they described that they don't want to be mowing the lawn. Is the phrase they used, where you keep treating the same patch of knotweed, it keeps coming back, then somebody else upstream doesn't give you permission, and now you have canes floating down and just reinfecting it. So they want to move systematically and eliminate it from its source, so that you're not leaving everything undone upstream, basically.
Hmm.
So it will be a challenge to...
What about your infestation downstream that's doubling it farther down?
And that was my point.
Makes it harder to control.
Yeah, that was my point too when I was talking with him. Just, you know, how is this going to work if I have one person that says no? The state's very interested across the board. The state weed board is very keenly interested in enforcement actions to make that be designate weed enforced on, so that the person can't just refuse. But now the grant funding paired up with enforcement would ensure that that all is done.
So you've got a stream, let's say Salmon Creek, and you start at the headwaters and you work your way down, there's nothing, and you come to this landowner here that says no.
Mm-hmm.
Now you may find out that there's nothing in there at all, but it stops everything, anything down below at all.
That was my question too, about how do I know if he's holding anything up really or if he's not? And the answer that I got back was not very, you know, well, yeah, not very satisfying. Just that if you know that he does have knotweed, then that's what stops everything. And to me, that sounds like, how would I know that? I'd have to see it. So
you got your drone up?
Yeah. Nope, I didn't see any on his plate.
Yeah. But you know what makes it frustrating? I mean, you could be, you know, 2 or 3 miles, have a landowner, and then be 5 more miles of nothing, but it, you know, till you get to the furthest downstream source. And
mm-hmm. So it's their grant. They get to decide what happens with it. And, you know, to faithfully execute their wishes, and it is important. You know, we're going to be providing them reports and deliverables. And I can understand the idea of wanting to make sure that we're eliminating things. I would just express my concern that while we can treat knotweed at the farthest headwaters, there's nothing saying that we are going to eradicate it in those farthest headwaters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of times there'll be, you know, 3 canes out of 100 that just refuse to die that first time around. So, could be wishful thinking, even still. So,
you said part of it's not good about enforcement action. How do you notify that property owner that, you know, either voluntary, let's go on, or eventually it's going to cost you dollars and cents? And somebody will go on. And there's a fine line of putting that across, because he starts threatening somebody and they bow their neck a little harder.
Oh, yeah.
But what's your answer to that?
That's a good point. I wanted to continue work that Casey has been doing to set the table early and say, we need to be here. Other organizations sometimes just have a statement of, we're coming to survey. And you can make it a statement like, we're coming to survey your area, we're coming to survey this whole river system, whatever it may be. And at the point where somebody refuses, then take it from, like you're saying, a conversation about, well, we can come and do this for free, or you can do it yourself at your own expense. Or if, you know, you're not going to sign off on either one of those, then, you know, this is what enforcement looks like, and this is the process that, you know, we'll need to do. And if it's just as simple as them relenting, saying, you know, you can look for it. A lot of times we get that. People who are opposed to herbicide, and that's really, you know, let's be honest with knotweed, that's the program, herbicide. A lot of times people will relent and say, well, you can just look. Come and just look, and I haven't signed off on anything other than just looking. And, you know, sometimes we don't find anything, and so it's a moot point. You know, at that juncture we say, okay, bye, you know, be on the lookout for this, and then we don't have to do anything else. If we do find it, then it does lead down to the next path of, hey, so now our conversation is different. You do have this, and they do have the right to get rid of it themselves, and if they want to dig it out, that's an option that they have. It's a bad idea, and we steer people away from it as much as we can, but, you know, the law says they have to stop it from propagating. So,
I mean, it's not much different than saying, well, we're spraying for gypsy moth, and you don't have a choice. We're going to fly over and we're going to spray for gypsy moth, and we're not necessarily going to avoid your property
right.
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how deep do the roots on knotweed go?
Amazingly deep.
They must, because I had a friend that had a spot, 3 foot or so in diameter. I gave him some chemical and told him how to use it. Boy, we nuked the heck out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was gone for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he goes, wow, there's another spear coming.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. And I'm going, wow, how far did that come from? Yeah.
Yeah, so originally knotweed in Asia grew on the sides of volcanoes in rocky areas, would have been lava flows. So its roots are really great at getting deep into crevices and surviving in places that other plants don't dream about. So now when it's over in our streams, it can put roots 30 feet down, maybe. And if it's doing that, then yeah, those are going to be very tough to kill. And kind of just highlights why digging it out as a non-starter.
Yeah, a real good idea.
You know.
Okay.
So it's not all good news with the knotweed grant, but we'll do the best we can there.
Yeah.
I think that the take-home message for this group is, don't be surprised if we do have some enforcement actions coming for knotweed for this specific purpose. Trying to get people on board, and both carrot and stick, you know. If you can't do this for free for the homeowner, then, you know, the landowner has to understand that there's something else to it as well. So we'll just need support on those if it does come to that. Oh, and I was going to mention, also just throw in the weed-free forage twine. We've actually seen that at our fair. people are making handicrafts out of it. They've got like little wing chimes or something, and they're using Wefree certified twine. So I don't know where that's coming from, but it's a little odd. Just wanted to mention
they like the purple and gold.
Yeah, it's
Columbia River colors or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
So I need to take. Just a little bit of an interesting thing there.
I think they can find some more ewes.
I thought maybe you were going to say that you actually saw bales coming in with the animals and stuff, that weed free forage coming in with the 4-H and FFA and open class stuff, but not necessarily that. It's their own okay. Shoot.
Well, that would be good too. Right.
Just dawned on me, the fair buys some local hay. I was wondering if they're buying wheat free, not to cause them more trouble, but
they could.
They buy a few tons. Most of it's something else. But.
You guys have this handout. This is where.
Well, I thought Kevin, you were going. It's money. It's
oh yeah, no, you're right. Probably. So I was going to say, you guys have our handout for the fair map. Big X on the building that we're in now. If you guys want to stop by, we always love having visitors. The building is basically just west of where we used to be. They kicked us out of that other building. But we're very, very close by. Not too hard to find.
Mm-hmm. You must be right down from the Farm Bureau booth.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Same building. They're at the entrance and we're middle of the building. Alright, and next I wanted to just bring to your guys' attention that there's been sightings. We've made a couple new infestations. Big head knapweed, we found another infestation, which brings the total of something like 3 in the whole county. And oblong spurge, there's about 10 more infestations that are new this year. The rush skeleton weed, I would also just say, is seems to be spreading, or we're finding it better this year than we did last year. And it's just proliferating all along the highways. So we did a great treatment on it this year, but time will tell. You know, next year I'll be keenly interested to see what happens with that. Okay, I've already mentioned that we're in the building to the west now. Okay. Next, I just wanted to talk very briefly about a possibility of new software. And it's a form that you can use on your collection device, if that's an iPad or if that's... I use my phone just because it's handy to put in my pocket when I'm fighting through the blackberries. I don't have to have a big, iPad. But the form kind of looks like this, where it fills up the whole screen with buttons that are large. And the reason why this is so desirable is if you're going down the road at 50 miles an hour and you happen to see another infestation of tansy, maybe on the roadside, and you just want to say, more tansy, and you just want to hit that button and have reports get entered quickly. This is great because the field inspector doesn't have to pull off to the side of the road on a road where there's no safe place to do that. This is something that we're going to look into. And
does it pick up your GPS off your phone?
Exactly.
Okay, good. Yeah.
So the report would basically just be the species, where it is, the day that it was entered, who entered it, things that are fast for the device to just capture for you. And hopefully be a lot safer and allow us to come back to a lot more places.
Right? So it's safer to punch that when you look down.
We want to have the assistant be able to punch the button, and the driver keep doing what the driver does.
I wasn't sure where you were going with all that.
Right. No, it's a good question.
No, he's not advocating for you to text and drive.
Yeah. No, definitely not.
Well, I'm not talking on. I'm just punching it.
Yeah.
Well, don't you have one of those new self-driving cars, you know, that you just let it drive and you just sit there and text? And
Oh, boy. Next, in your handouts, these two pages of emails, handouts with the calendar on the front, You guys had mentioned some concerns with erosion material in development, and if that straw had been weed pre-certified or not. Following up on that, I sent some emails out. You can see here they are. Newest emails at the top. My first email, bottom of page 3. So I just wanted to highlight for you that they are aware of it, and they already feel pretty confident that their folks are requiring that to be placed. But as you can see on page 3, that material gets placed without an on-site presence from the county a lot of times, and once it's down, it's too late. So I don't know what about that could change if they don't have the manpower at the beginning anyway to be on-site. Then I don't know what we would do about that. And on page 2, you can see that they're asking also if there's a way the weed board can provide support for them to get board approval for their stormwater manual to have standards that are stricter than the Department of Ecology manual. So Rod Swanson actually wants to have this update to their stormwater manual, and that would be submitted to the state within the next year, must be county board adopted by June 30th, 2021. So you can see that they're open to it. They would want to change the stormwater manual to call for this change.
Some of double-edged sword. I mean, and I would want to brush some of it up. There are some people that put up tansy fields and call it erosion material.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some people that put up material that may not be certified, but yet it works good for erosion control. So then, if we get it in the manual that it's requested, I mean, I wear hats on both sides, you will actually add a lot of cost to the projects if you make it mandatory to the county or to the developments or whatever, and then you may not be able to find the material, then what do you do? It's the scalpels that I'm talking about, the guys that just go make up the weed patches, and then they turn around and use it. So now, didn't you say, or somebody said here at the meeting, that there was a bunch more acres this year that people asked for certification on? Did that follow through? Was there a bunch extra made? Did it qualify? Did it not qualify?
You know the current acreage?
I don't have the number for current acreage. Actually, Kara has been really busy just in the last couple of days or last week. So we can get that, maybe send it out in an email just to update you guys.
That was it.
But she has had new growers, and they have had her out, and I can just get an update from her on what happened Friday.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
That's new growers in the cereal grains then? Because it can't be hay. So it would have to be straw.
Grass seed straw?
Grass seed straw.
Yeah.
Could be that.
Right. I suppose.
I'm thinking of Alan Kangas. I remember that's where she was on Friday. Does that help?
Yeah,
I don't know if that helps.
And,
Altman? Okay.
We turned around. No, yeah. We put up some, and I only got some because I didn't know they were coming in with a combine or with a swath or a truck cutting, and they had 100 acres down before Justin come out and got 12 acres out of a 25-acre field, and that's all I got certified this year. It's all the same material, and Akara had come out and looked at it earlier, but it doesn't qualify, and so we didn't put the purple string on it.
But I do have the same material that isn't got purple string on it. So I guess that's, I mean, I can speak as a user, which we will be using some of it ourselves, and the uncertified, but yet it's the same material as the certified, but it just didn't meet the criteria, didn't meet the requirements to have them know, you know, 3 days ahead before you combine or cut. And so that's why I'm bringing it up here now. You don't want to turn around and cut down on the supply, because sometimes people just don't meet their criteria. Mm-hmm. You know, things fall through the cracks, and whoops, I forgot to call. Well, then you can't document it that it's certified. So I think the biggest concern I had was there were some people who had been down around Daybreak or whatever cutting down there, and it's half tansy, and they put it in for your erosion material. Yeah, they go cut the dry fields like right now, and just cut them all, and it goes in the bale, and it use it for erosion control. So there's, I don't know what the answer is, but there needs to be somewhat, or maybe spot inspection at the sites when they're putting on, and if you can see the standing tansy stalks sticking out of the bales, it wouldn't be certified stuff. Or the same thing with thistles. If you got hay with thistles in it, you can tell it's got thistles in it when it's in the barn or when it comes out. You don't have to get your fingers stuck. You can see the stalks in there. Something like that. And I don't know how you would control that, but if your bale is half full of stalks, then you know that's something that you don't want to spread. Another thing is dock. You can really pick that out in the bale. I mean, that's just like a piece of bamboo. All three of them that I mentioned are like bamboo in a bale. But so I don't know the answer. It's the guys that are doing that and spreading it at that. The other ones that have 90% clean stuff.
The ground that you had that you weren't able to get certified, was that grass seed straw they were running?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's entirely different than the guys that are going out there and cutting any dang dry patch they can find. Because, of course, you have to meet certification on grass seed, and it has to be, you know, clean to a certain degree.
Well, they can clean the weed seed out, though. Yeah, if there is. And, yes, they do. It's inspected by the seed companies when it's growing. They come out and check it out and see.
So you've got field inspectors that come out, either the Washington State Crop Improvement Association or somebody comes out, versus the ones that are just
every vacant lot they can find to bail.
I realize what you're talking about. They've been cutting, and I was sitting there going, my God, you know, what are these people dreaming? They're going to feed these, you know, to this stock. Well, that's probably it. They're bailing it up for erosion control.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know the happy medium or how, but I if you want to stop spreading of weeds, that's one of the big issues. But there's a lot of the county projects that do require certified, but I know there's a lot of them that have been not used certified, and it's good material. I'm not saying it's bad material, but there are some that put up bad material, and it goes out on projects too.
Mm-hmm.
Something to mull over, think about, talk about another time.
All right. In a totally different vein, you guys had also mentioned that it might be nice to piggyback with people's mailings they already get when they're in the current use program, if they have land valued as ag or if it's an open space program, a statement reminding them this needs to be noxious weed free because of your requirements in the program. So I went and talked with the assessor and touched base to figure out, we had some other questions come up when somebody's land was valued as farmland and wasn't in the open space program. Really, only the open space program has requirements for noxious weed-free. If it's land valued as farmland, that agreement is separate, different, and doesn't have any specific requirements for noxious weeds to be in that program. And the assessor let me know we're not going to be able to piggyback any sort of other statement in with those mailings. It's not something they do in-house. They actually have a separate entity.
So even the open space program, they would not?
No. Then they already said that they are trying to complete an audit for all of the open space properties. We're fine to send them, you know, problem properties and say, hey, this is in and rolled in the open space program, and it does have noxious weeds, and they will evaluate that in their audit as it's already going through. But they go through them already on a rolling basis, and they're a little behind. So just wanted to bring that update to you guys for you to consider. Current use is something that's maybe a little different than some people thought it would be. We run into that with some landowners who are, I guess, are trying to get their neighbors in trouble with their tax status, not just with the weed board.
They're revamping the open space. Actually, they're moving before the commissioners here, I think, 13th of September, 7th or 13th, the public benefit rating system. And it's only for open space. It's not for current use or farming, not farm and ag, but it's just on open space. Okay.
There's always a back door and get them in there.
4 years. Wait, yeah. 4 years. Yeah. But no, that didn't come out of me. But it's actually, we had our last meeting last Monday, and then it's going before the commissioners. It's going to be presented to them to see whether they will move forward with it. And then it has to go through public hearings and. And everything else yet, but that's something that's moving forward in the public benefit rating system. You get credit for if you have a trail across your open space, as far as reduction in your taxes. Right now, everybody gets the same reduction. Green Meadows Golf Course gets the same reduction as what you get for your open space if you have a 10-acre piece. And so they're going to add in if you allow public trespass, like I said, trails, or if you've got wetlands in it, then it's public benefit there. And so you get more credit. So instead of you start out at 10% reduction and you move up the ladder 50% or 70% if you get a bunch of those different criteria. Kevin, haven't you sat in on some of those meetings?
Yeah. So it'll go to a work session in September to present what the group has come up with so far. And Lee's right. It's kind of a menu of items instead of you qualify for a couple of different options within open space. So if you put together, you could theoretically put together a piece of property that has wetlands or a stream, and you want to allow for a trail through there, and you know, maybe there's a couple other, like you have a historic barn that's on the property as well, and you can kind of check off all these items, and then that adds up to a higher or lower, depending on what you have, reduction in your taxes or deferral in your taxes, because it's not It doesn't reduce the tax. It just gives it to everybody else.
So in other words, if you have a piece of property has a wetland on it, you could be taxed at I guess...
If you're in open space.
I don't care open space or not. I mean, you have a piece of property with wetland. Say it's 10 acres of wetland. Yeah. What the heck? You're not able to do anything with it anyhow. Why are they taxing you at the rate of condominiums?
Well, they don't. If you fight it, you can get it. If it's been delineated or you can prove it, I have a piece.
Yeah, I think if you could show that you could only legally build a single house on the property because it's all encumbered with wetlands, and they would have to, but you'd have to appeal it, I would guess.
Right, and bring the proof to deputy assessor or whatever and show. And I have a piece that I have for even current use, and we farm it, but it is wetland. It's been delayed.
Farmed wetland?
Farmed wetland, and DOE has signed off on it, and actually the telephone call I had just a minute ago was from a wetland consultant and I had to talk with. But anyway, they have reduced that because you cannot build, you can't do anything on it
down the road.
So you do get credit if you turn around and bring it to their attention.
Okay.
So I found.
Okay,
we're getting off subject here a little bit. from weeds to dirt.
Well, all right. Just wanted to wrap up some of those loose ends. We've got one citation being issued now. You can pass those around. Those are pictures of it. It's in Camas, owned by Camas Crossing LLC. Just wanted to keep you guys in the loop on this from the beginning. And this landowner has been unresponsive for years. This is actually probably the fourth year now that I'm aware of, where we've had not any, I would say, response. To include, I've done a little sleuthing, tracked the owner down when there's a corporation, LLC, that owns the property, then you go through the Secretary of State to try to find their registered agent and, find that phone number and all that. Talk to the receptionist, try to get the person's phone number. When I actually did get a hold of the owner, they just hung up on me. That goes to the level of avoiding, quite a bit. So, as soon as they hear who I am and, what I want, then, they hang up. So.
Double the fine.
That's why it gets to this level, and, I would like to see something done with it.
So, Justin, a case like this here, what does the fine look like it'll settle out at?
Well, we have the option to come at after it again, basically, but because of the whack, the first citation is $500. So that's what I've written, is $500. And we have a invoicing system that's new, called Workday, and it's not fun to work with. Yeah. So it's delaying things a little bit. And as soon as we can get that invoice generated and attach it to the citation so they have something to pay instead of just, sticking a stamp on a $500 bill and mailing it back, where we wouldn't, have an accountant wouldn't know what to do with that. So we need that invoice, and that's coming along, but we're going to get that out the door as soon as we can. That's a long way of saying that after that one's done, based on our procedures that are in place, after that expires, which I think is 10 days, we can do another one to say, well, you still haven't done anything. These plants still have their seeds and you know, you were served with this civil infraction, we can slap another $500 infraction.
So it's another $500. It's not
correct.
It's not like 10 times the rate, like,
no.
Really.
No, the WAC
next year can go up.
Right? Yeah, that's right. Second year offenses can go up. The WAC specifies all that. So, $16,750 in the administrative code lays all that out. So it can go up to a maximum, I believe, is third year $1,000, yeah. Second year $750, and that's the limit.
Shoot, company like that, they'll just.
Well, they're a developer, obviously, and they're waiting until they can sell. The property just to the south of them has a multi-story building that's going up. That area is exploding. So they
could. You know, you could find them $500 10 days later, you'll find them another $500?
Right. Yeah, and the way that
so
the way
second
that
year you could find them $750, and 10 days later $750. Yeah. So
according to our policies of Clark County, yes.
Plus, they're still going to owe the $1,000 from the first year, right? That doesn't go away.
It'll
go,
yeah, it'll become a lien. Yeah,
right.
On the property.
Okay.
Right. Assuming they don't pay it. So the way that the letters have gone out in the past, violation letters, I remember. They have said right on there after they list the schedule of fines, this can be per parcel per day. And so the way that Washington law allows, we can just keep writing them. And as long as my ink doesn't run out of my pen and I still have the pad to go from. Now, you know, is that really, you know, going to work? I don't know. You know. The way that I've always been told by Casey and every other weed coordinator before, the law says that for a Class B, since you're trying to control it, control means stop it from propagating. So once the seeds fall off, it has propagated. You know, that's the thing that we were designed to stop. And at that point, you can't really do anything else. But you can see maybe these ones that I've included aren't close up enough. But I did take closer up shots where you can see the seeds are on there. So we still have some time.
That's an M1. Is that M1?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So just wanted to keep you guys in the loop on that one. And that concludes everything that I had.
Okay.
So it's not a maximum of 500 in the first year. If you give him three fines, he's up to 1,500.
Correct.
So per parcel. So
per parcel, so per day.
And I don't think we've done more than one per property
before. We never
have. Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. Usually one gets people's attention. But
I'll tell you what I would be in favor of. I would be in favor of an abatement this time next year.
Yeah.
Instead of sending out another couple fines, let's take care of the problem. We know about it ahead of time. As soon as we can see that stuff start coming up, or, you know, some of this is right alongside the road. So this is real easy to come back to.
Right.
I would much prefer to schedule some sheriff deputy time, get the judge to sign off on it, do everything that we've got to do, and start controlling the plants, because that's really
and
what
then
we're about.
Charge it to him, is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Send the invoice for our time. That invoice becomes a lien. Same deal, but we're getting a result.
Makes good sense. Okay. Anything else from the board? Questions? Crew? Trouble?
Do you want to talk about Vancouver Lake at all?
Sure.
The treatment?
Oh, absolutely.
The algae bloom and all that?
Milfoil.
Oh,
milfoil. Well, algae bloom factors into it as well. Absolutely. Maybe I'll bring you guys up to speed on some of the collaboration that we've done real briefly. I think I might have at the last meeting made mention of. Part of the project has been for us to make a plan. And that's still ongoing. That's going to be something that we'll have some measure of working on this year. It's kind of to be determined. And then next year, we go into our next phase of actually we can implement that plan. Separate from Clark County and Department of Fish and Wildlife actually got this grant from Department of Ecology. Separate from that, there's a private effort which is made up of the Vancouver Rowing Club, the Vancouver Sailing Club, and they've moved right ahead with treatments this year. And they're using a new chemistry called Procellacor. I attended some training on that just last week, I think, week before. Anyway, that's very interesting. I can talk with you guys as much as you want about that. But suffice to say, they're moving right ahead with that treatment this year as soon as they can. They were actually slated to have already done it as soon as the label was cleared through the permit that was written for it specifically, but ran into a little bit of delays. They're going to be doing that as soon as they possibly can.
I think this week, possibly.
This week. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This week.
So what the paper was saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're supposed to have the dragon boat races there this last weekend, and they moved them to Ridgefield.
Yeah.
On Lake River. Yeah. I wasn't able to go down there, but I figured a couple thousand people coming to town from all over, you know, yeah, the Northwest.
Yeah.
But I stayed clear. You might put me to work, but it actually helped put Ridgefield on the map.
Yeah, another one.
You know.
Yeah. You guys need help.
That goes right back to the algae bloom problems. If they close the lake, then the whole milfoil issue kind of becomes moot. I mean, you can do as many milfoil treatments as you want, but if you're still getting blue-green algae out there, then it'll just get closed for a different reason.
Yeah, right. We can't compound it this year. We also had an E. coli outbreak.
And right.
So double. Yeah,
exactly.
A couple of times there where they, yeah, I don't know why they cleared it the first time and then come back a week later or whatever.
Does that have to be brought in on a boat or something, or can it blow in?
Which one?
Milfoil.
I think they were saying, could it come up the Flushing Channel? Is that part of the deal too?
Well, milfoil, I guarantee you, is coming in through the Burnt Bridge Creek Trail system. Goes right under the road, right under the railroad there, and I guarantee you're getting some of that because you look across just to the east and that slough,
mm-hmm,
a bunch of purple loosestrife,
yeah,
in there.
Yeah.
I guarantee there's milfoil up in there. Casey was just saying that when he was up in that area, there was milfoil. So it's getting washed down from there. It's probably everywhere. Milfoil is in the Columbia, and it could theoretically come from that direction too. Every direction.
And the birds are moving it.
Oh, really?
Birds are most likely moving it. Boats,
yeah.
A lot of things.
Kill the birds.
Anytime a piece of it breaks off, they can reestablish somewhere else.
So is it in Lake River then, too? Must be, isn't it?
It's got to be everywhere, yeah, I would assume. Yeah.
So it's flushing on through to Ridgefield and then out to the Columbia, if nothing else, again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
Salmon Creek could flush it the other way.
It's in Curtin Creek. It's pretty close to Salmon Creek, if not already in Salmon Creek.
It's probably in that lower section, I would guess.
The survey that we collaborated with Fish and Wildlife to do showed us pretty conclusively it follows the contours about three or four feet of the lake. And so if you've got a different depth, you know, on Lake River, then hey, maybe you might not get it so bad. But in those areas where it's 3 or 4 feet deep, then yeah, it's really thick at times.
But I mean, Salmon Creek runs into Lake River, yeah, and it's tidally influenced.
Right.
So Salmon Creek's tidally influenced,
yeah,
too,
mm-hmm,
part of it, for a wave.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at coffee this morning, and actually Gary Atkins, he went over east of the mountains, and he said everywhere in the Columbia River, wherever there's any backwater or dead water, it's covered with algae.
Oh, really?
Green. Mm. All over, coming down. But he said that the river itself, he has noticed the last couple of years, is a blue-green. It really, the river, Columbia River, looks healthy compared to what it used to in the old days. But the river really looks good. But it's the dead water.
Mm.
It's everywhere. At this time, they're getting a bloom.
Yeah, I was at Salmon Creek here a few weeks ago. Floated up there, paddled from Flight of Moorage up and up Salmon Creek up to the railroad bridge, and I was surprised how much algae, slime, whatever is floating in that creek. I mean, it's the, yeah. it's slimy. I mean, I don't remember that as a kid. That's my old stomping grounds. But floating down there, and it's real shallow. I thought it was deeper before, but it's sedimented in quite a bit. It's hard to find anything that's over that deep. Hmm. A few spots, but yeah, I wouldn't learn to swim in that thing again.
Probably a low tide.
That might have been. I know the tide was changing while we were there.
Yeah.
Wow, that thing is nasty.
So, Vancouver Lake, you go in and kill the milfoil. It settles to the bottom. Does it generate more blue-green algae?
Well, the way that the Procellicora works, it breaks down much slower. That fragments the plants in a different way, and all of those fragments don't go on to make more plants. So it's really a very interesting chemical.
But I mean,
the ones that you're talking about, all that material now is released.
Yeah.
All that nutrient is now available. It certainly could, but I would say, from what I've seen out there already, that's got the algae already has more than enough to do as much as it wants to do. So, influence of milfoil, I couldn't say for sure, but it looks like the algae's going quite far and away off of, I would guess, all phosphorus and everything that's washing into it already. I mean,
and the plant, I mean, is it milfoil kind of like an annual plant where it's going to die off every year anyway?
Mm-hmm.
So all of that dead material is going to be available in the lake for nutrients.
Well, and of course, we've got all that beaver dam soil, all that peat soil that's up above that, you know, has been drained and one thing another. And so when you do that, it starts releasing the phosphorus out and one thing another. I got kind of frustrated years ago because they were claiming, they said, well, all the phosphorus coming down is because of agricultural operations and agricultural fertilizer. And you go, no, it releases that phosphorus as that organic matter continues to break down. So, and that's feeding that blue-green algae in the lake and stuff, yeah. And I guess that's why I was wondering if the milfoil, another source of organic matter, will just feed that blue-green algae more. Yeah.
It could, yeah. I might not know as much as the next person on that system itself.
The folks that we've talked to at the state aren't concerned that that's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not one to argue with them, so I.
So this new herbicide they've got, it's apparently non-toxic to fish and stuff.
That's
really?
Right. Yeah, that's right. There's no restriction on swimming, no restriction on fishing, no restriction on use of the water outside of ag use. So you can't use it for ag. You can't use it for irrigation other than turf. But no restriction on drinking. So,
Trying to think if there's anybody down there using pumping water out for ag use at all.
I think Blaine said there might have been one person that had permitting for that, but whether or not
Anderson
they were
Anderson maybe.
Yeah, I don't know whether or not they were
asking. Could be
peaches.
I don't know if Firestone's down there doing anything anymore or not.
I don't know either.
Fazio? Oh, Fazio's, yeah. I don't know if they...
I don't think they irrigate.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I don't think he's pumping anymore.
Yeah. They generally pump water out.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
From that.
Yeah. Unflood the
ground. Yeah, yeah. So they can farm it, yeah.
Yeah.
But okay.
But they would have had to have already done all that homework ahead of time to know who to talk to or any of that. So
it's interesting. You can't use it for ag, but you can drink it.
Right. It's extremely active against milfoil, but it doesn't have enough activity at all. And stuff like curly pondweed doesn't touch it.
So
fascinating science.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Hearing nothing, I'll adjourn the meeting and now we can go to work or business.
Next meeting.